Right now, though, it's time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce is here, and Bruce, you want to talk about a very talented writer who left us far too soon.
Yes, Michael Steinberg passed away last week. He would have been about 78 or 79. What is important about Michael, besides the fact that he is renowned internationally as a teacher, is that he really took a genre that didn't have a true definition and helped hone it into one of the most popular genres today, and that's what's called creative nonfiction or literary nonfiction. And I think that if you were to ask, I think if you look it up, you'll probably get a definition like nonfiction that uses literary devices to create narratives or something like that. That's all true. But what Michael Steinberg taught the world to do and was so good at was telling your own story and then making it the reader's story as well, ruminating about things. And his book, Still Pitching, I don't have his new book, Ebbets, Elegy for Ebbets, but I'm working on it. Gibran's working on it. He tells the story of growing up as a fairly affluent Jewish boy on Long Island actually in Far Rockaway, and wanting to be a baseball player. And I think that the thing I can tell you is best is the inscription of the book that he wrote to me. It's about what it's like when you're that kid who really wants to do everything he can to be good, and there are 1,000 obstacles in the way, some of which are your own fears, some of which are bad coaches. He wrote, "For Bruce, this is a coach's book. I'm sure you're a lot more humane than mine were, and just as demanding in the right way." Well, I don't know if that praise is right or not, but it's what Michael Steinberg was about, and that is that we want sport to be an ennobling part of our existence. And yes, it's tough. It teaches us hard lessons. It doesn't always go the way you want. But he wrote about growing up and how baseball affected his life and let us know who he became. And as my friend, the poet Joanne Solfrian, said, Michael Steinberg never, because he could never, hid his dignity. He was the most dignified guy I knew, and he started a magazine called Fourth Genre, where he taught at Michigan State for 30 years. And Fourth Genre is a literary magazine unlike all others because it only did creative nonfiction. And it taught people that essays can be really great reading, and they can be important and informative things. We think of the essay sort of as the personal essay we were taught in high school. And that's all fine and well and good and all that, but when you can take the personal essay and extrapolate from it universal truths or make observations about the world we live in a way that inspires you, it reminds me a little bit of if people know Thoreau's North Maine Woods. Yes, he talks about going on this long trip in the North Maine Woods, but it's more about the guide and the hunting and the fishing and the mountains and the flora and the fauna. Yes, he's telling us a story, but he's using the poet and the novelist's literary skills to do that. And in Still Pitching, that's what Mike does. And it starts in 1950 when he was 10 years old. He first sort of became enamored with baseball. And he learned very quickly that high school is about cliques. It's about, the different ethnic cliques, the different sports and the like. And how, if you are successful as an athlete in high school, you gain a particular status. I mean, you just do. If you're a varsity football player at a school where football is serious, you gain a certain status. If you're a starter on that team, a greater status. If you are one of the players talked about, a really, they quote skill positions, an even greater status. Well, there was a time when baseball was just as big as football in that way. I don't know that it is anymore. Baseball has, as a sport, has waned in popularity for, I think, self-inflicted reasons. But we remember that Mike has grown up in the era of radio and baseball. There are 3 teams in New York. He's a Dodgers fan. When both the Dodgers and Giants are gone, he refuses to become a Yankees fan. he would say it to me all the time. He said, "Bruce, I really wanted to join you guys, but I just couldn't because I just couldn't." But this is a book that should be read by anybody that, A, has a young boy or girl who wants to play sports. There are a lot of lessons to be learned in here. It ain't fair. It's not going to be, there is no level playing field. There are good coaches, there are okay coaches, and there are terrible coaches. And we should all be on the lookout for the latter and see what can be done about it. But it also teaches you that you should never define who you are by how you play a particular game, because you may have a skill, but that's not who you are. That's just something that mm-hmm. you do. And I, when I remember the night that I first had a long conversation with Michael, was at a lounge, shall we say, or it was a bar in Freeport. And I said to him, so Mike, what do you really look for when you're looking for quality, creative nonfiction? And he said, I said, because I got to ask you this. I said, there are these long conversations you have with a coach. And Mike, they happened 50 years ago. How did you remember them? He goes, I did my honest best to remember them in complete detail. He said, whether he called me an idiot or a jerk, it didn't really make any difference. I just had to remember what happened. He said, and it's a scrupulous honesty mixed with a poet and a writer's understanding of how language makes us understand things better. And it really opened my eyes. I started reading a lot more creative nonfiction. I remember reading a book called Stirring Mud by Barbara Hurd. It was just fabulous.
You sent me, State Diner, 1957, oh, yeah. was just beautiful.
Isn't that something special? Mm. Yes, that's in Chicago Magazine. And it's it was published not long ago. Some of that is here and still pitching as well. Yeah, the ability to look back with not just nostalgia. There are a lot of great writers. Mm. You know, Garrison Keillor does that with the whole nostalgia thing, you know. And that's fine, and that's not a criticism of his writing, whatever his behavior might be, his writing. But with Michael, it was always a look back. You got the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
You know, to coin a phrase, if
right,
you will.
Right.
And there's something...
But doesn't that honesty when you write about the parts that weren't nostalgic and fun
right.
and wonderful, that makes those moments that were special that much more valuable.
Yes, in Still Pitching, and I really encourage people to get this book. It is in print, Michigan State University, Still Pitching, a memoir. One of the great things about this is a kid who wants to tell the coach to shove it. He wants to just flip him the bird and walk away. But something inside tells him to stay with it. And it ain't all honey and milk and Cracker Jacks, but there is a moment of redemption that is phenomenal. And there's a moment when Michael looks at this coach who has lost an important game and almost for a minute feels sorry for him, which shows you that this is a kid who got it. You know, he understood empathy. He understood competition. He was a pitcher. He pitched seven scoreless innings when his armor's ready to fall off. He did the kinds of things kids do when they're trying their damnedest to be the best they can be. But always in his mind, he's seeing this all in the larger picture. In the number, if you look at all the major international writing conferences, Prague Summer Conference, the Paris Writers Conference, the one in Switzerland, the name escapes me, the now international nonfiction one, which was in Reykjavik when Mike won an award there, he taught at all of them. And he taught for years, he taught teachers how to teach creative nonfiction. And that is not easy. And the fact that thousands of teachers flocked to learn from him, and these are teachers everywhere from middle school teachers to people teaching in MFA programs and graduate programs, because he could give you those skills. And I just always remember him saying one time, I said to him, I said, I have a friend that likes to say there are three sides to everything, yours, mine, and the truth. He said, well, when you decide what side you're on, make sure it's the right side, you know? And I thought, that's it in a nutshell, babe.
Yeah. When you talk about kids and coaching, and yes, you're going to have coaches from all over that spectrum. And to me, that's the value of it. You know, the lion's share of young men and women who play sports are never going to go anywhere with it. Yep. But it's what you learn about life. And you learn, same thing with teaching. As you know, having been a teacher and a coach, you got a student who doesn't get along with the teacher, who doesn't like that teacher. That's awesome. Overcome that.
Yeah.
That's a challenge to you. Same thing with a coach. Now, obviously, if you're talking about an abusive coach, that's a completely different situation. But you got a coach who's not doing the job and you don't get along with, or a coach that doesn't value your talent, your attitude, that's an opportunity.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I was thinking about this today. I got a telephone call out of the blue as I was coming out of the Hannaford and Brewer from a former BAPST athlete. He went on to Williams, competed in track and field. Very, very bright young man. Name of Chris Fogler, holds a whole bunch of records, and I think it's still a PVC record or two. And he just wanted to talk and say, you know, he's been out a long time. Let's get together. Let's have a beer. Let's do something like that. And I thought to myself, you know, there were kids who hated me as a track coach. I'm sure there were. I mean, I know one of them. I see her sister all the time. She reminds me how much she hated me. And what I always learned from Michael was, if a kid really hates you, take a step back and figure out why. Because right. It ain't got 100% them, as he would say, you know? And I realized that sometimes that just hard insistence on we're all going to do it the same way. You know, the things you and I talk about, like if you tell me you're going to be at every practice rehearsal, be there. And then if you start coming up with lame excuse after lame excuse after lame excuse, I'm not going to be happy about that, right? But if a kid comes to you and says, look, I've got to tell you why I can't be here. Please don't explode on me. You have to take a deep breath, sit back and say, okay, explain it to me. And I think that was not the way with coaches in the 1950s and 60s in a lot of places. It was my way or the highway. I'm in charge. You'll respect your elders. You'll do what the coach tells you to do. And Mike had to deal with that. And the way he doesn't, and he was scouted for pro ball, but he knew he'd never make it. He said, I'm not, you know, that's nuts. What? So he says, the best kid in our high school lasted 2 days in the Yankee tryout camp and didn't even get to rookie ball. No. But he took with him this idea of still pitching, that he's always through life, you know, you got to get the next guy out, which is sort of, a metaphor for whatever, do the right thing or do the next right thing, whatever Frozen 2 is, do the next right thing, right? And I just, anything you can find by Michael Steinberg, especially anything from the fourth genre, the books that he edited that he took their best essays, if you have an interest in sports, in decency, in humankind, and learning what we can learn from people who've given things a lot of thought, find some books by Michael Steinberg. Still Pitching, Picture of Ebbets Field on the cover, a memoir.
Excellent. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Rich.